Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is a man who we have great respect for, Senator Michael Gianaris, a Democrat from New York's 12th District. That's around Astoria. You remember Astoria? Welcome, Senator Gianaris.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for having me back on.
So let me start by asking you about the feud. Not since Annie Oakley and her feuds with various people. Let's talk to you about the fight that is going on over whether or not Bezos and Amazon should have gotten the tax breaks that they're getting. I'm fascinated by the way this is all playing out. Now, I saw a poll that said 70% of your district wants them in there. Is that right?
No, certainly not. That poll was funded by Amazon, so you can imagine how objective that is, given that they have $3 billion on the line to making this happen. So, you can make a poll, say whatever you want it to say. And so when Amazon's paying for a poll, they ask the questions the way they want to ask them, and they talk to the people they want to talk to, and they get the results they want.
Well,
but that's not the reality on the ground.
Michael, as a politician, there are two theories of politics. One is leadership and one is followership. Should a politician do what's right, or should a politician follow the wishes of their constituents?
Politicians should always do what's right, but oftentimes the people that a politician represents are correct in their view. And in this case, that's what's happening. Forget the Amazon poll. You can throw that in the trash, but I can assure you that that the sentiment in Long Island City and in all of Western Queens is very much against this project. I'll refer you back to a more credible source to give you an example of how that skewed that could be. Quinnipiac asked two questions about this deal back in December. One was, what do you think of Amazon coming to Queens? And there was a widespread support for it. The second question was, do you want to give them $3 billion to come here? And there was widespread concern and opposition to that. So depending on how you ask the question, the more the deal is explained to people, the less support there is for this thing.
Well, the governor's claiming, of course, that upward of $30 billion will come in, and it's only costing a measly, what, $3 billion or so to give them. Is he right?
No, he's wrong. And take a look at the estimates and the overestimates of all the activity that every other economic development project the state has embarked in the last several years has done. There's always grandiose predictions that never come to pass. And there's a whole host of economic development projects the state has had that are littered with problems. And we don't want Long Island City to become the next on the list.
Okay, let me go from there to a larger sort of playing field. First of all, I wanted to ask you about an article that appeared in the Daily News as we speak today. And it has to do with the tax incentives, and it has to do with something that is outside of my comfort zone. So perhaps you could explain what you are trying to do with a bill that you're introducing.
I think you're talking about the Opportunity Zone program.
I am.
That was a federal program that was started last year, or in 2017 rather, that was intended to, had good intentions. It was intended to provide incentives for investment in economically distressed areas and more impoverished areas. The problem is the way it was constructed allowed the state to designate where those areas are and gave them wide latitude. So what's happened is the governor designated a whole bunch of census tracts that are not distressed at all, including the parcel that Amazon itself intends to use. So because the program allows for areas that are close to economically distressed areas. Now, when you're in New York City, you cross the street from one block to another, and you could go from a very poor area to a very wealthy area. And that's what happened here. Just down the road, about a quarter mile from this Amazon site, is Queensbridge Houses, the largest public housing development in the country. And that is genuinely an economically distressed area. But to give incentives for people not to build in and around Queensbridge Houses and to invest economic activity there, but instead down the street, which has a very wealthy population, is turning this program on its head. We can't do anything about the federal tax breaks, but the state definition of taxable income matches the federal one. So if there's a federal break, it transfers over and the state gives a break as well. I'm proposing we pull the state out of providing this tax break.
Well, will you be able to get your colleagues in the assembly, which, and I'm fascinated by this, I'm going to ask you about it. There seems to be a little bit of tension over some things with the assembly. I'll talk to you about that specifically, but will they go along with your bill?
Well, I mean, this bill was just proposed, so we have to begin a conversation and see what level of support there is, not only in the assembly, but also in the Senate. I don't speak for all my colleagues, so hopefully we'll convince people this is a good idea and move forward with it, because it also saves the state money at a time when there's a big budget hole that was just identified. So it's important that we do this. I will also say I'm curious to talk to you further about the Senate-Assembly relationship, because I've been in Albany a fair amount of time now, and I have never seen the two houses work so closely together in the history of this state. We have passed groundbreaking legislation at record speed through the month of January. Together with our partners in the assembly, we've had the most productive January in the history of the state. So I think the relationship is pretty strong.
Well, Michael Giannaris, that's right. And I have nothing but respect for the kinds of things that have been done. And yet, let me give you a specific, and that has to do with the idea that there needs to be some cover for the Democratic senators who are elected from suburban districts, where the number one issue is how much they are being taxed. Whereas the assembly under Carl Hastie has made it clear that with the protection, I think it's fair to say, of the teachers' unions, that they are not all that happy about the governor's plans and other plans to put a 2% cap on taxation. Whereas the Senate is going to need that cover in order to get those senators to get reelected and maintain the Senate. That may not be the most articulate presentation you've ever heard, but what do you think of that?
Well, look, the cap has been in place for several years already, I think even Speaker Hastie, when asked this question, said it doesn't mean we're not doing it. It just means we're not doing it today. The two houses operate on their own calendars. We decided it was important to make a stand that we think controlling property taxes in this state is an important thing to do, and hopefully the assembly will come along.
Well, Michael Giannaris, what about that as a potential beginning to be wedge between what the New York City Democrats want and what the Senate Democrats need in order to maintain control?
I don't think this is going to be a problem. You cannot expect unanimity on issues and unanimity on calendar between 212 legislators, or even just the majority legislatures, which are 140 some odd between the two houses. We have worked together like never before, and I believe we'll work together to help rein in the property tax problem in this state. But there will come times when we disagree, and we'll work it out like brothers and sisters and figure out the best way forward for the state.
How personal? Let's get down and dirty in the weeds here. How personal has it gotten with the governor? You know, I've not always been his favorite person. Has it gotten nasty? Have you replaced de Blasio as his best fencing partner?
I thought he loved you, Alan. He's not your favorite? I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to play psychiatrist here with him. I'm just trying to do my job the best I can. We have fought in the past. We have agreed in the past. I try to keep the focus on the issues and doing what I think is right. And if we agree, then I'm happy to work together. And if we disagree, I'll make my point. If he wants to get personal about it, that's on him. I think it reflects more poorly on him than it does on me. But look, I spent 8 years dealing with Jeff Klein in the IDC in the Senate. So when necessary, I work with people I need to work with. And when we disagree, I'll make myself heard.
By the way, just on a personal level, congratulations on what happened to the IDC. You stuck to your guns. These were the renegade Democrats, so-called renegade Democrats, so-called traitors who went and helped the Republicans stay in power. You were up there and you said no compromise. And in the end, you won.
Well, I appreciate that. Really, the people won because it was the voters who came out in force last year to make very clear what they thought about that arrangement, and that's why it doesn't exist anymore.
Are you a tough guy?
I don't know. Am I a tough guy? I'm a nice guy, but I'm tough when I need to be.
Well, I'm raising this with you because of one individual who really did play it dirty where the regular Democrats were concerned, and that's Simca Felder. Now, you may remember, of course you remember, that he caucused, even though he was a Democrat, with the Republicans, and said he would come over when he needed to. And then when you guys won, he tried to come over, and you said, not so fast. Can you explain that to me?
Well, our conference is very united, like never before. Part of that has to do with the IDC being beaten. And we have 39 terrific members who are moving as a unified force right now. There was a discussion about what to do with Senator Felder, and the consensus was that the best now is to get ourselves moving in the right direction as a group, and that maybe those who want to sit with us should run for election as proud members of the conference. And Senator Felder didn't do that last year. So that's kind of where we're at right now. But we'll work with anyone who wants to work with us. He's voted with us on several issues that have come before the legislature already. And we'll take it from there.
Okay. So there are a lot of things I want to talk to you about. But one of them is the pay commission court case. You know, you got a 50% raise for lawmakers. But the condition was the outside income be limited, and that has infuriated a lot of or some of the top people who are making money on the outside. Can you fill us in on where that's all going?
Yeah, well, as you know, Alan, in all my years in both the Assembly and Senate, I've never made a penny of outside income. I've been a full-time legislator throughout my time there, so it's not something that personally affects me at all. The commission made its decision. I know there's a court case underway to evaluate whether their decision was permitted to be the way it was. But I'm happy to live with whatever they've decided. We're moving forward in the Senate, assuming that what the commission decided is going to be the rules we operate under.
So it's being challenged, though, in court, right?
Yes, it is being challenged in court, actually, interestingly enough, by a group funded by the Mercer. So a right-wing group is actually...
I missed that last thing. Some of our listeners may not know how lucky we are to get you, Michael Gianaris, and that for some reason you're broadcasting from the moon. So I missed that last.
I'm in my car, unfortunately. But I will. What I was saying is the court case is being funded by the Mercer family, which is a very right-wing interest. So interestingly, the challenge is not coming from members of the legislature, but from an interest group that generally advocates for more conservative points of view.
When the dust settles, will you lose members who can't afford to not work on the outside?
I suppose that each senator or member of the Assembly has to make a decision for themselves when the time comes. I think the outside income ban goes into effect at the end of this year, and people have to make a decision whether they want to stay in the legislature or continue to engage in outside employment. But unless the court case reverses it, that's where we're at right now.
So they'll have to work as hard as they can to make as much money in this year as they possibly can before next year rolls around. Okay, that's just...
that's one way of looking at it.
Okay, so this legislative session, record start, Reproductive Health Act, Child Victims Act, voting reform, recreational marijuana is coming, right? So what's next?
Well, I think we're going to be looking very closely at some environmental protections. There's going to be a serious discussion about ways to combat climate change. We're going to look at criminal justice reforms. There's going to be additional election and campaign finance reforms I believe we're going to take up. There's still a lot of work ahead of us. Healthcare is a very big issue. The rent laws in New York City are up for renewal. So we had an incredibly productive January, but we're not going to take our foot off the gas because there's too much to do.
Let me ask you this. There's always the possibility that you will not keep your majority, that some of the people who got elected, as I referenced before, will find it rough going, that the Republicans will retake some of those seats, that you'll be out. Now, this is pretty important because, in other words, right now, the reason that you're in perilous times is obviously that the Republicans were gerrymandering those districts like crazy. Now, when is the next opportunity to make those districts more fair?
The next round of redistricting is scheduled for 2022. So we have The next election is next year in 2020, and then that would be the last one under the existing lines, and the next election after that will be with newly districted lines.
Therefore, I think what you're telling us, Mike Gianaris, is that the next election is really crucial.
It is. I'll put it to you this way. Our majority is now 39 members, so we have a seven-seat majority. We netted 8 seats this past year. That was so historic that it doubled the number of seats that flipped an election from the last highest turnover. So never before in the history of the state we had more than 4 seats flip parties, and this past year we had 8. We would have to lose another 8 to lose the majority. So I don't think that's likely, especially in a year when the presidential election is taking place. Sure. That usually brings more Democrats out to the polls. So we are always on guard. We want our members to do a good job and get reelected. But it's extremely unlikely that we're going to lose that many seats to jeopardize the majority.
I've heard the governor brag that basically it was his efforts that made you put you into the majority. Is that right?
Look, our candidates got themselves elected and got themselves to the majority. The governor was helpful, and we certainly appreciate that. A lot of our friends in organized labor were helpful. A lot of the grassroots activists, especially in this last cycle, were incredibly helpful. And, of course, the conference through the DSCC and Leader Stuart Cousins did a lot of heavy lifting. But the governor was there in important ways, and certainly appreciated. But there's enough credit to go around. A lot of people had a role to play in this.
Mike Gianaris, tell me how you're going to get the trains, particularly that L train, running in New York. Is there a way to do this without the kind of suffering that the strap hangers have had to put up with?
Well, the MTA is in crisis, and we are trying hard. This is one thing that's so infuriating about the Amazon deal for me, is that we are trying hard to find 2 nickels to rub together to help fund repairs on the subways. And we're having a lot of difficulty doing it. So what we need to do as part of this budget process is find a dedicated revenue stream, make sure the money is spent wisely and quickly so we can get things back on track, no pun intended. But we don't have the luxury of squandering $3 billion to Jeff Bezos when the subway right in the very neighborhood they want to place Amazon is already stressed to the max. So we have our work cut out for us. It's a big problem, but we have to solve it because that is the lifeblood of the metropolitan area.
So let me ask you, I see on your website that immigration and family reunification figure prominently in your worldview. Can you fill us a little bit about why you were paying that much attention to this as a state senator?
Well, first of all, it's personal for me. My parents are both immigrants. They lived this immigrant story of coming to the United States for a better life and making a better life for their children. And they've had two successful children, myself and my brother, who's an attorney, very successful attorney. And I want to make sure that that continues, that legacy continues. So we need to welcome and encourage immigration in this country, not put up walls. Now, a lot of this stuff is set at the federal level, but we have a role to play here in New York. And I did do a lot of work with some of the families that were separated at the southern border to get them reunited with their children. I'm very proud of that. And we're looking for other ways in New York to help encourage immigration, because this is the state and the city where so many immigrants have landed, not just my mother and father, but so many others. That's why Lady Liberty sits in our harbor.
And the Greek community really does support you overwhelmingly. We know that, right? And the question is, are you sure that your fellow second-generation immigrants are with you on this?
Everyone's got different opinions. You can always find some dissenting voice. But for the most part, people that have benefited from the culture that welcomes immigrants, particularly in New York, recognize and want that to continue. And so, yes, I've seen tremendous support for it. You know, I was part of the reason the community is so supportive is my role in promoting the diversity in the state legislature. I was the first Greek American elected to office from New York City. And now we've gotten to the point where there are 6 of us. We have Andrew Grunardis, James Skoufis, even Daphne Jordan, who's across the aisle, is one of us, so to speak. And in the assembly, you have Arabella Simotas and Nicole Malliotakis. So it's a group that prides itself on the immigrant story that we've all lived, and want to make sure that we get to have that opportunity for other people.
So let me go to another place, and that's Mayor Bill de Blasio. Obviously, he has a lot to say. He agrees with the governor, at least the way that I see it, on having the Bezos deal go through, the Amazon deal go through. Although there are those who think he's getting a little quieter now. What do you make of that situation?
Well, look, I think the deal is a mistake. And to the extent that the governor and the mayor realize that and not dig the hole deeper, but recognize that it's time to rethink this, the better. I have no personal objection to people making a mistake and saying we thought this was a good idea and it wasn't. But I would discourage folks from hanging on too tight to something just because they feel they're stuck in a position. And so I say this to the governor and the mayor. It's time to rethink it. There's no need to go farther down this rabbit hole if we all realize it shouldn't have been done.
Okay, finally, I have a thousand things more I wanted to say, but we're out of time. I wanted to ask you, what's your next move? Do you like where you are? Would you like to run for mayor? Would you like to run for governor? What about Mike Gianaris' personal plans in 1 minute?
I love where I am. I've worked very hard and waited a long time to,
yes, you have,
to get to a position in the majority. We've achieved it in ways that nobody thought possible, without an IDC, without a narrow majority, but with a sizable one. And we are doing great things already. I'm so thrilled to work under the leadership of Andrew Stewart Cousins, who is an incredible figure in our state. And right now, I'm just happy that my sleeves are rolled up and we're getting things done for the people, because that's why I'm in public service to begin with.
Well, let me just say, first of all, congratulations. As you know, I've been a big fan for a long time, number one. And number two, just keep fighting the good fight. I don't know what else to tell you. Not that you need to hear from me on that. We are out of time. Our guest has been New York State Senator Michael Gianaris. Senator, thanks so much for joining us. Always a pleasure to host you on this program.
Well, it's always great to be with you, Alan. Thank you.
And not only that, I don't know how powerful you are, but all of a sudden, all the horns and honking and everything else has been done away with. Now, that takes a powerful senator.
I'm sorry I had to do this from a car, Alan, but I appreciate you accommodating me.
Okay. Thanks so much, Mike. We'll see you the next time.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.